Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I was very, very nervous. I had never, you know, gotten up and spoken in front of that many people. You know, you have that the first time you do anything, you have that little bit of that imposter syndrome where you feel like, I don't know really if I am I qualified to do this? Or are they going to ask me questions that I don't know? Am I going to feel foolish?
This is Money Talking from WNYC. I'm Charlie Herman. And today, first impressions and second chances.
And I think my nervousness made me less of my sort of normal, friendly, outgoing self. And so I got a lot of reviews back that said, like, well, she's so arrogant, she thinks she knows everything. And it was actually the absolute opposite. I was terrified that I didn't know anything.
When you start off on the wrong foot, can you change how people think about you? Well, Heidi Grant Halvorsen says, yes, you can. But first, you have to understand yourself better and realize that the people around you, they have no idea what's going on inside your head. Halvorsen is the author of the new book, No One Understands You and What to Do About It. And she wrote an article for the Harvard Business Review, A Second Chance to Make the Right Impression.
You know, I thought it was obvious to everyone that I was terrified. But so often, really, our behavior has multiple ways you can explain it. You know, there's that expression, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. That's perfectly true. But so is everything else. Everything is in the eye of the beholder. And so the reason I wanted to write the book was to sort of give people an understanding of what it is that people are seeing when we see one another. We feel like we see what's there, right? We feel like we just look at another person and objectively, exactly. Like we feel like, you know, when I look at you, I'm just seeing you. And so and you assume I'm just seeing you. And so we assume we're on the same page. And nothing could be further from the truth.
So, but what happens if you make a bad impression on somebody? What happens if there's a misinterpretation of the person you're trying to present and the way that somebody is interpreting that?
Yeah, it causes some big problems. And I think so there's a reason why there's so much written about how to make a good first impression because of that. What the research shows is that it's very difficult to get someone to update an impression of someone else. And that has – and again, it's not a conscious thing. It's not that people are stubborn or willfully, you know, not wanting to update an impression. So it has everything to do really with how our brains work. What we do when we form an impression of someone is, you know, we take initially their how they look, their words, their actions. We combine that with a whole bunch of things that are already in our brains, like expectations, beliefs, past experiences. And that's how we create an impression of someone. Now, once we have that, what your brain naturally does is when it sees new information, even if that information kind of contradicts the impression, right? So if I've decided that you're not so bright, let's say, and I got the impression you're not so bright, not you personally, Charlie. And then you do something that's actually quite clever. What my brain is likely to do is think of that as an anomaly, right? Or say, you know, do one of those, well, even a blind pig finds an acorn every once in a while.
Wow, that was surprising. He actually was funny or
clever. Oh, I guess
clever.
He got lucky, you know? And so we kind of interpret new information in a way that allows us to keep the existing impression. So how do you change it?
Well, update that? You say if it's really difficult to update.
It's challenging.
How do you do it?
You can do it. And you can do it in two ways. There's sort of the tortoise way and the hare way. So the longer term way to do it that takes a little bit more time and effort is that if you, let's say, have a reputation for being late all the time, what you need to do is not just be on time a couple of times because that's not going to be enough to do it, right? What you need to do is be early, and you need to be early for weeks on end. Right. And if you're early for weeks on end, people will say, hey, you know what? Charlie's really changed. He is actually really a punctual guy. And they'll be impressed by that. Right. But if you just do it a couple times, they'll just say, well, I guess he accidentally got here on time today. What you need to do is to provide them with a lot of evidence that you aren't like how they think you are. And it has to be eye catching evidence. That takes time and energy and effort. The quicker way to getting people to update their opinion of you is to actually create what psychologists call outcome dependency, which is basically you involve yourself in that person's life in some way that their outcomes depend on you. So if you have a colleague, for example, that you think has formed a bad impression of you, find a way to work together on a project, like ask to be assigned with that person. And so it's natural to not want to do that, right? But if it really matters to you that this person sees you accurately, then what you really want to do is get them motivated to take another look at you. And nothing motivates people to take another look at someone and really read them accurately, more than having to depend on that person to get what they want. And so, again, unconsciously, I'm not going to be aware that I'm doing this. I'm going to start really paying attention to you and what you're like and trying to be able to anticipate and predict your behavior. And that extra motivation turns into extra accuracy.
Break it down for me. What happens when you first meet someone?
So what the research shows is that when we first meet another person, our main question that we're asking, again, at an unconscious level, is, can I trust you? Right? Are you an ally or are you a potential enemy? Right? Are you someone who's going to make trouble for me? And the way we answer that question is by tuning into two dimensions of someone's personality. The first is warmth. So that, I mean, is very broadly means things you do to indicate that you're interested in someone, that you are concerned for them. So making eye contact and holding it when someone's talking, looking like you're listening, nodding, you're doing it right now, nodding to indicate that you understand, leaning forward slightly in a conversation, expressing empathy where that's appropriate, asking questions about someone else. All of those things signal that I'm concerned about you, I have your interests at heart, and I'm a friend. The other dimension is competence, right? So that basically tells us, are you a potentially powerful ally or a potentially powerful foe, right? Are you somebody who can act on your intentions? Now, one of the ironies of making first impressions is that we tend to really focus a lot on competence. Leaders make this mistake a lot, that when they first get into a leadership position, they're really preoccupied with making sure that they look like, you know, they deserve to be there and they have the skills.
Look, everybody, I'm smart and I deserve this job.
Exactly. The problem is, when you project competence but you don't think about projecting warmth, what you actually end up doing is conveying that you're a potentially powerful threat. And so people don't trust you, and they don't trust you. Leaders don't get followed if they're not trusted. And so this is, again, this is all happening very unconsciously. But one of the things that I talk about a lot in the book is how important it is when you're first meeting someone to signal warmth first. First and foremost, warmth. And for some people hear that and they say, well, I'm not really a touchy-feely person, so I'm a little uncomfortable with that. My husband is from the Midwest, and he, you know, heard that and immediately said, hang on, that's really not something we do. I said, well, no, it's really not about, you know, hugging and effusively praising or anything like that. It really is simple things that indicate
engaged.
To someone that you're engaged in what they're saying, exactly, and that you have concern for them, and that you are genuine. Especially that there's a dimension of warmth that really is about sort of the moral aspects of warmth. So being a principled person, being fair, being honest and transparent, those are the things that really make people feel like you're an ally. People don't know that they don't do these things. Like, they'll say, oh, yeah, I do that nodding and maintaining eye contact.
But
you don't, actually.
But how do you overcome that? Because take me. I sometimes like to think I'm kind of relaxed and laid back. But I also know that I'm probably not, that I probably give off an anxious and intense vibe. If I'm not necessarily in tune with that or aware with that, I'm not aware of the impression and the effect it's having on people around me.
It's a really good question. And the answer is you have to ask people who you trust to tell you the truth, because there isn't really a good, you know, quiz you can take or something to find this out. It really boils down to, who can I trust to tell me what it is that I do that gives the impression that I'm maybe not overly friendly?
It's so funny, because what you're describing here is not necessarily your competence at doing the job per se, but at all these sort of hidden body signals,
right.
And not necessarily related to whether or not you're a great accountant or you're a really great stockbroker or whatever it is.
No, you could be totally cold and be a great accountant. But the problem is that people have to work with you. And often when you're interviewing someone, it's not simply about what their skill set is. It's about what kind of colleague you're going to be, what kind of employee you're going to be. And people who are cold, you immediately just trust less to be a team player, to be someone who will be helpful when necessary, to be someone who will be easy to work with. So often I think people can end up not getting a job, not because they're not, you know, very, very skilled, but because they've given the impression, totally unconsciously, that they're not going to be someone who's easy to manage. They're not going to be someone who's easy to work with. They're not someone you can really trust to be on your team and be helping you to reach your goals.
So,
and every manager cares about that, at least certainly on an unconscious level, if they're not really consciously thinking about it.
What about those people who give really, really amazing first impressions, but it's hiding like a lot of problems in the background. Like that first impression is great. You start working with them, and then a year or two into it, you're suddenly thinking, oh my God, this person's crazy.
Right. Yeah, it happens in relationships a lot too.
Very much.
You know, the one of the
There's
things...
There's that three-month barrier
exactly.
usually with relationships.
And then they show the crazy, you let the
then
crazy
Then you see the
out.
Real.
You know, it's funny. When I first started writing the book and I would tell people about what I was writing, they said, oh, it's a book on how to make good impressions. And I said, well, I guess technically that's true, but
because there's a danger in relying on your first impression.
Right, absolutely.
Both you know, good and bad.
I prefer to think that this is a book about how to come across authentically the way you intend to. But it's absolutely true that there are people who are very, very good, sociopaths, for example, very good at sending signals that, you know, they're very charming. And what is charm? You know, all the things that people do that indicate warmth and interest can be an act, right? It can be something that's done deliberately and manipulatively. So that is a real danger because it takes a long time for us to update our first impressions. Those people that are faking can get by on that for a very long time before we actually start, you know, and this is, again, everybody's had a relationship like this where, you know, you're what you do when the person does start acting differently.
A little odd.
Is a little odd, a little more negatively, is you start making excuses. You start coming up with reasons.
Put it through the filter that you've created based on that first impression.
Exactly. And you know, oh, it's because they're stressed at work. Oh, it's because of this. Until finally there's that tipping point where you say, oh, no, it's actually because I was completely wrong.
If you say that one of the things to worry about is that people not getting you or not understanding you or you giving a bad first impression despite your best efforts, what are the consequences of that?
Oh, the consequences can be tremendous. I mean, there's the short-term miscommunications that happen all the time. But just in general, what the research shows is that people are what we call more judgeable. So in other words, you're more easily understood by other people. People tend to get you a little bit more. When that's the case, it turns out that is related to sort of higher quality of life along all sorts of dimensions. Life is just easier when people get you and really kind of understand what you're about and understand what you want and understand what you're trying to do. And so all kinds of measures of well-being and life satisfaction and even physical health are related to being a more judgeable person. So then the question is, what makes you unjudgeable? And I think in general, people who are shy have a harder time, not necessarily introverts, because it's important to keep that distinction. Introverts like their alone time, but they're not necessarily shy. But if you are shy, you have a hard time expressing yourself. If you're a reserved person, you're just giving people a lot less to go on. One of the things that makes someone judgeable is that they are talking a lot, saying a lot, doing a lot, really kind of, you know, making their thoughts clear by articulating them. If you're someone who's more reserved, you're going to be less judgeable. The problem is people will fill in the blanks. If you don't tell me what you're thinking, I'll just make something up. And I won't really feel like I made it up. I'll feel like I deduced it in some way from your behavior. But a lot of times we are just making it up. I mean, like those kids in my, I'm sure it was horrible, first class that I ever taught. You know, they took my absence of warmth as a deliberate kind of arrogance. And it wasn't that, right? So if I had actually taken pains to show warmth despite my anxiety, then they would have gotten a very different impression.
Heidi, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Charlotte.
Heidi Grant Halvorsen is the author of No One Understands You and What to Do About It, and she regularly writes for the Harvard Business Review. And what about you? Do you find that some of your opinions of your coworkers are based on a first impression? I remember my first day here at WNYC, someone was so mean to me in the first hour that I was here, I couldn't believe it. But I got over that impression, and now she's one of my favorite people here. So what about you? What's your biggest problem at work? Tell us your story, because it might be the next topic that we try and tackle with the authors and researchers at the Harvard Business Review. Together, we're trying to explain the culture of work and find ways to answer the problems that we all face so that we can make work a better place to be. Send an email to moneytalking@wnyc.org, or even better, record a voice memo on your phone and then email that to us. And if you haven't subscribed to our podcast, go to iTunes or wherever it is that you find your favorite podcasts. I'm Charlie Herman, and this is Money Talking from WNYC.